It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Wow! Saint Nick came and threw up all over your place.
I mean, it's the usual thing for us, holidays.
Yeah, but compared to last week, you're in a different room. Is this the office? Where are you?
No, this is the same room.
Just angled?
Yeah, just different angle.
All right. I like it. All right. I want to talk for a second about something the boy said. This is a topic I don't think anybody else is going to find interesting, but it's just a thing that's been bugging me up here. And let's be honest, that's why I have a podcast, so that I can make other people listen to the things that have been bugging me up here. Sure. So I want to talk about something the boy said, a song written and performed by Sting off the, I don't remember what year, probably somewhere in the late 90s, album 10 Summoner's Tales. Now, I'm in no way an expert on music or anything, but I think we can all agree Sting peaked at Soul Cages. Let's just be honest. It's not that he's not amazing, but Soul Cages was the last artistic struggle, I think, for him. And after that, he got into that thing that so many did, where he became mega famous at that point and mega rich. And everything after that is a little bit head up its own ass. You know, I feel like Soul Cages is the point at which he stopped wondering if he was any good as a musician.
Okay.
Everybody has it. When you get successful enough, eventually you just sort of buy into it and it doesn't resonate the same. I'll be totally honest. I haven't seen a Tom Hanks performance that has blown me away in years. The guy is one of the most amazing actors out there, but at this point he knows it, just kind of is there and he does his thing. And I think Sting is the same thing. And you can tell because right after Soul Cages was 10 Summoner's Tales. And I like 10 Summoner's Tales. I believe in various platforms, I have purchased 10 Summoner's Tales with actual money like 3 or 4 times. And I'm confident stolen it illegally a couple of more. But I have purchased a lot of copies of 10 Summoner's Tales over the years. I love the songs on it. It's a little out there. It gets a little Ren Faire-y. There's some weird ass songs on 10 Summoner's Tales. Little songs about his girlfriend giving him ultimatums or else she's going to leave with some giant guy. A weird song about the angst of being a professional poker player. Just a lot of weird, weird stuff on 10 Summoner's Tales, including Something the Boy Said, which is a song I had known and I liked. And I still like, but I hadn't heard in a while. But I recently have started doing this thing with my Apple Tunes where I just shuffle every song that's on there because it's very easy to hit track forward if it's something I don't like. And I discover all sorts of shit that I haven't listened to forever on there. And it's great, especially in the car. I love it. So this has come up a few times now. I've listened to Something the Boy Said. I'm guessing from your expression, A, you're bored, but I don't care about that. B, you don't recall Something the Boy Said.
I'm not bored. And I don't have a very good recollection of it. We owned that album and listened to it many, many times. That's one of the songs that I, you know, sometimes we might have skipped to go to another one, maybe.
I don't remember what song, but 10 Summoner's Tales was near the end of my real CD days. And I remember that I scratched it in one spot. So there was one track that you could only listen to like half of, and then it got fucked up. And I couldn't afford to buy another CD, so I just lived. And I don't remember what track it was, but I remember it was something I liked, so I was really annoyed. But yeah, no, it's not one of the stars of the album, but it is a good song. It is a song about, as near as I can tell, it's another one of these sort of, let me tell you a story, and I'm not really going to give you the background too much. He does a lot of those. This appears to be a song about someone in some sort of land-based militia or army of some kind, in some sort of arguably probably medieval village or hamlet, where the men of the place get together to march off to war. And as they are doing so, the son of their captain says something very ominous and disconcerting to them as they leave. And this weighs on them throughout their trip. And they think about it. And they sometimes talk to the captain and are like, is your kid psychic? Because if he knows something we don't, we should not do this. We don't want to go and just have a bad time at war. The captain, as far as we know, gives no response, at least none mentioned in the song. And then eventually it appears that the ominous portents that the child said sort of came true. We end on a weird, vague place, but things went bad, and it appears that they went bad in a similar fashion. Haunting story, really. But I'm stuck on what the kid actually said, which we know, and how that played out. Because what the child said was, you'll never see our faces again. You'll be food for a carrion crow. And I cannot get over this idea of like all the men of right age and able-bodiedness heading off to march to war. And this kid says that and doesn't just get the biggest in the middle of the town square whooping that you ever, like, that would disrupt the proceedings, right? You'd be like, what the fuck, Glenn? Sorry, Captain Glenn. What the hell is Stevie going around saying we're just going to end up as bird food? Are you teaching your kid this shit? What is happening? We're leaving for war. This could genuinely be the last time we see all our families. Who taught him how to spout off this shit? Like, screw it. I say, give him a sword. He's coming with us now, fucker. Like, how? Like, it's one of those things. I love those things that, like, in a song is so poetic. But I'm like, in the moment, that would be crazy, right? If the kid said that as you're leaving for war. Like, that kid would, at a minimum, that kid would be grounded to all hell. Like, right? It's just me, isn't it?
Well, it when you say it like that, you realize that it's not a thing either, that in conversation later, two soldiers are talking, that one of them would go, but you know, there's something the boy said.
Yeah.
Like, everybody remember knows that, what the boy said.
Remember that shit he said earlier? Your kid ever predicted any major military defeats in the past, Captain?
I'm just saying that expression is almost something you use for something that other people might have forgotten if you weren't bringing it up.
Yes. So yeah, something obscure and like, yeah. Something the boy said. Oh, something, Derek? Something? Which could it be? Could it be the bit where he said, bring me back lots of presents? No, probably not that bit. Was it the bit about us never returning and being food for crows? Was it that bit that was in your brain? Because for me, that's the one I'm mostly thinking about. Jesus, Derek, we know. We were all there in the middle of the town square. Fucking Steve. Captain, Steve's full of shit, right? Like, he's not, oh, yeah, no, my son says that. He says that, literally, I go out farming. He says that. That's just his thing. Okay, because, like, I don't mind telling you, it creeped me the shit out. If it was my son, I would have smacked him upside the head right then. Yeah, yeah. His wife handles that. I mean, his mom handles that.
There's just something he said. What was it? I just can't.
I wonder. It's the medieval years. We only let kids say so many things. Honestly, we didn't want him to say that. You've known this child for years. You've probably heard him say three things. Only one of them was about your untimely demise. Which of the three things were you thinking about? Yeah, no, I love doing this with songs in general. I still, one of the most fun things for me to do is to take 80s pop songs lyrics out of context. For example, Hold Me Closer, Tiny Dancer. Or Touch, If You Will, My Stomach.
I don't know that one.
That's from When Doves Cry by Prince.
Yeah. I never paid attention to that song.
Touch, If You Will, My Stomach. Feel how it trembles inside. Like that. There's a lot. Prince got a lot of lyrics that you're like, when you just say them, it's very strange. But this one, I'm just like, yeah, it's a long one. Like, but how would that have gone down? That would have been weird. Anyway, hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast not trying to win hearts and minds. We are trying to win feet and kidneys. And we are not about to give up. I am Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 560.
560. And I am on the road to recovery. As you can tell, I sound better, maybe yes, a little crazier. And the reason I sound crazier is I'm now roided up. I'm on prednisone, baby!
Ah!
I was getting better and getting better and getting better, but I still had this crackling in my lungs. And so I write in on the My Chart thing and was like, do I come in? I know that's a risk in this day and age to even go to the doctor because other people are going to give you COVID and shit. Do we want to do a telehealth? Should I just hold out? Do you want to just call in a prescription for prednisone? Because I have an issue with asthma-like symptoms when I have upper respiratory infections, and we always give me prednisone, and it's great. And My Chart, you can't just send a message to your doctor. You send a message to everyone, and it gets to your doctor. So I had, I believe, three different doctors and two different nurses responding to everybody and being like, well, of course you have to come in. What are you talking about? How is the symptom? And then finally my doc came in and was like, yeah, Tony, if you're not better tomorrow, call in and come in. And I was like, okay. So I did. And then I worked with what I'm guessing was a 16-year-old med student and his 18-year-old attendant. And it was really beautiful to see them try and doctor. But we got there, and in the end, we eventually decided on a prednisone subscription. So every month, I'm going to get prednisone in a special box. No, prescription. And now I'm on it for 2 days. I haven't noticed a change, but I've also still been steadily improving. So I am still, I'm sure there'll be a coughing fit in here somewhere, but for the most part, that's it. Otherwise, I'm feeling better. So I'm slowly now, because this is the thing, and you know this a lot, I'm sure, right now. At our age, shit goes wrong with you. Shit gets better, but then your body has to get back to being normal.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't feel sick now, but I've already had to take a nap today, even though I slept the whole night. Like, everything is exhausting because my body is not used to that, because I spent basically 2 weeks sitting around doing nothing and being sick. So I'm getting back. I'm reclaiming the house. I'm catching up on chores and stuff, but it's good to sort of be back and functional again. Trish is better too, because Trish got it. She usually either doesn't get it or she gets it a few days after me, but she also recovers faster. And so she's actually back at work and she's being careful. She's just in her office, but she wanted to get back. Today's the first day she's back. She's been working from home. So that is all settled. Sorry, people. For those of you just joining us, I don't even know why I bring this up anywhere. You email a magical hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, and the hat sends it on to us, and we talk about it sometimes for a bit if we want. Otherwise, it's just these two dudes playing out their entire many years relationship over Zoom, and you're either into that or you're not. It's not an acquired taste or anything. It's a very specific deal. And so you probably already know that if you're here. So how's your week been? You sleeping in beds, taking regular showers, craziness.
Yeah, it's been pretty nice just to sort of be normal for a while. But as you were just kind of alluding to, you know, it's going to take a while to feel normal, you know. And everything's been going pretty well. There's not a lot really to talk about. We watched Lost in Space because they had a final season.
Oh, the Netflix one? How is that?
Lost in Space, I mean, if someone saw on paper what this show was going to be from beginning to end, and they knew me, they'd probably say, oh, William, this will be perfect for you. And they'd be right about that. There's a lot of things about it that are going to be right up my alley, but.
But you're not one of the four quadrants.
Well, the execution, mostly in terms of the scripts, wasn't great. The acting was really good. The production values were mostly good. And I liked the story. All right. I watched Lost in Space when I was younger, so there was a little bit of a nostalgia aspect, but also, you know, it's a sci-fi story to begin with, a sci-fi story, hard sci-fi, or closer to hard sci-fi ish. Than not.
Yeah.
Yeah. And robots, you know, that kind of thing. All the stuff that I would normally like. And I, you know, we watched three seasons of it and I was glad I watched it. Oh, and it has, what's that guy's name? Shoot. Steven. Anyway, I liked everybody in it. I liked lots of things about it, but the scripts just were never very strong. I mean, show for show, there wasn't like one good show or even very good moments. So, I mean, if you're like me and you like those elements and those elements can get you through, well, by all means, watch it. If you're looking for like quality TV or something, it's not, I don't think it's really that. So
I didn't particularly watch the original show. I was too young for it. And then normally to watch a lot of those old things, you had to have certain basic cable channels that aired reruns of them that I didn't. The huge ones I still got. So Gilligan's Island, stuff like that. But Lost in Space was just, I needed TV Land or something, which I didn't have. I've probably seen one or two episodes in my life. And then I remember the movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie was very bad.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
And I think that poisoned my taste for a TV show. And then I think initial responses to the TV show were extremely tepid.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of wrote it off. I didn't know it was still out there. The fact that it got a third season from Netflix is probably a good sign, because they don't give out third seasons often.
Well, it was a third and final, so.
Yeah, but still, Netflix very specifically does. It is very easy to get a second season. It is quite hard to get a third season unless you're very popular. There is some cost thing that happens at a third season, apparently. I was noticing this a lot, and then I read some article about it. And yeah, there's something about the third season that does it. But yeah, now you got me curious again. we finished season one of Doom Patrol, although we might have done that last week.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that.
Yeah, because I didn't talk about that. And we finished season one of Ted Lasso. At the moment, we are doing season two of Ghosts.
Oh, okay.
And we just started The Nevers. And by just started The Nevers, I mean we are halfway through the 6-episode season. Hmm. Did you end up watching The Nevers?
No.
I'm surprised. I would have thought Victorian chicks with superpowers would have been absolutely up your alley. Or your wife's alley, at least.
Is that the Joss Whedon thing?
It's the former Joss Whedon thing, yes. That thing was in production when Joss Whedon became persona non grata and he left the show. He gets the writing and director's credit for the first episode, and he gets the created by and an EP credit for the other ones. And it's not got a source material. It was totally out of his head. We've heard decent things. It's been on our list. We just finally actually started watching it. We like it. We don't like it as much as we should like it. And we don't entirely know why. It's doing a lot. So it has some tonal issues because there is a lot going on. And it has that Whedon-y thing of serious, intense drama, and then just with no warning, lighthearted shenanigans. You know, which we all loved about Joss Whedon, but can be jarring. I've got it narrowed down to two reasons why I don't like the show as well as I should. On paper, I should fucking love the show, and I enjoy it, and I'm gonna keep watching it, but I don't love it. I don't even like it, but I like it enough to watch it. It's two reasons possible. One is it is pulling instead of good storytelling, we're just not going to tell you a lot of things to keep it mysterious.
Yeah.
And I fucking hate that. And I don't think this show needs to do that because it is jam packed with shit. And it's only 6 episodes. You do not need to be holding stuff back. But they are. And the other thing is it may just be the specter of Joss Whedon. I can't. And that's on me. That's no fault of the show. But I can see him in it, and I know he worked on it, and I have bad feelings about him now. And I see weak moments, and not only are they weak moments, but I'm like, oh, that's such a fucking Joss Whedon thing to do. Because we've got these female characters that kick ass, and then we have to have secret traumas and, you know, and all this. And the main character, for no real reason but action set convenience, to the degree that the show itself references it, keeps ending up with her dress off. And I mean, it's Victorian time, so she has perfectly functional, elaborate undergarments, but it just keeps happening. And I'm like, it's got a Joss Whedon sensibility that makes me feel not great these days. So that might be it. But I still think it's a decent show and it's worth watching. Impeccably acted. There are some amazing actors in this doing some really impressive performances. So I do like that. But yeah, we'll have to see. So that's our other current one. What are y'all watching?
Besides Austin Space. I don't know. I can't think of, you know, Abby was playing video games there for a while. You're playing Katamari or whatever again, aren't you?
Yeah. I found out you can buy a remastered version of the original Katamari Damacy for PlayStation 4. And I loved Katamari Damacy. And I was not a big fan of the sequels.
Oh.
And so I was super excited. It's the original. It's got the original soundtrack. It's got all that business. And it's as fun as I remember. It is more exercise than I remember. A lot of, like, I get tired after the, but again, I've been sick. Also makes me a little motion sick. I can only really play one or two, which is weird because it's third person. And also I seem to be having, be fine with the first person, but just too much motion in the wrong ways, I guess. So, but I've been having fun with that. Yeah. It's good to get back into the original there.
Seems like there was something. I mean, Oak Island's back, so we've been watching that.
Oh, God. Year 16 of not finding shit.
Year nine, so you're not far off.
Sorry, year nine of not finding shit.
I know, that's an impressive enough number, right? You were exaggerating to say 16.
I just love the idea that this show is going to be long enough that at a certain point, people are going to talk about when the show stopped being good. Like, there's going to be a point where people are like, you know, in early seasons, when they weren't finding anything, it was interesting. But now it's just so formulaic of them not finding anything. Like, that's what I can't wait for. Like, people like, oh, I like the mystery of Oak Island. Like, oh, which seasons? You know, because after it really jumped the shark after season seven.
Thing is, they always find something. It's just, are you the kind of person that's going to be interested in what they're finding?
No.
Well, I am.
Sorry, so. Did nobody mention that up front? No. That's what I'm saying. You're going to hit a point where they're finding stuff you're not interested in anymore. You're going to be, man, this show used to be cool. Mm-hmm. This show used to be about a money pit. What the fuck happened to that? Now they're just jumping through time trying to chase bank robbers. What the fuck happened to this show?
I'm actually the least interested in the money pit. I'm more interested in, you know, I find it interesting when they think, when archaeologists especially think they're not going to find certain things in a particular place and those things are there. And so you have to ask, well, why, how did they get there? Who put them there? And why did you think that they wouldn't be there? I think that's
interesting. Other brands of cough drop are available.
So, but it seems like, I mean, we were keeping up on Doom Patrol before its last season ended. And that was a few weeks ago. And also we were keeping up on Titans, but that one ended a couple weeks ago. We were not really keeping up on too many things, really.
I stuck my foot in it about Ghosts over Thanksgiving.
What do you mean?
I mean, my brother-in-law says to me, have you guys been watching Ghosts? And I was like, oh, my God. Wait, yeah, we are one season into the British one. And this is a show that I've been wanting to see for a long time. And I couldn't find it anywhere. And I was very excited because they were still doing it. And I knew some of the actors in it. And then I found out they were doing an American remake. And I'm like, oh, that's going to suck. But then I found out from my friend that the original British one is on HBO Max. And so I've been watching that. And my friend saw the American one and he says it sucks. And then he pauses and he's like, well, we're just watching the American one. We didn't know there was the British one. But we think it's pretty good.
No, the American one's not good. Although it's hard because if you've never seen the British one, you wouldn't have that to compare it to. So maybe it's good.
And I do want to see the American one, but I want to wait until I've seen the British one all the way through because I don't want. I would rather the British one color my feelings of the American one than the American one color my feelings of the British one.
I mean, the American one has Rose McGowan in it, who I love. I love Rose McGowan. But
holy shit, Rose McGowan's still acting?
Wait, did I use the wrong name?
You must have.
I think it's still Rose, though. And it's still Mick something. Who was the gal who was in iZombie? Is that
I don't
Rose?
Know. I didn't watch iZombie, but maybe.
Rose.
That maybe definitely wasn't Rose, Rose McGowan. McGregor. Daughter of Jim.
No, I'm remembering now who Rose McGowan is. No, it's not her.
Yeah, no.
That was a misspeaking on my part. I'm forgetting.
Because
everybody.
The things I don't like about Ghosts are very much staples of British sitcoms. And so it's possible that the American one doesn't do those things. And that would be
Rose MacGyver.
There we go. All right.
I was never going to remember MacGyver because as soon as that name comes up in my head, I'm going to think it's not MacGyver. Nobody's really named MacGyver. Well, yes, she is. Rose MacGyver.
Rose MacGruber.
I really do like her. And I kind of like her in it because I like her, but it's not good. It's not written very well. I mean, and also American humor compared to British humor just doesn't hold up. I mean,
I don't know though, because British sitcoms have issues that I don't like.
Well, I'll agree with that, but at least they're often more subtle, I guess, in their humor. Like they seem to respect the intelligence of their audience more than American.
See, I don't know that I agree with that, because the thing I hate about British sitcoms is they're all about people doing horrible things and suffering horribly for it.
Well, there's every episode. Yeah, that's
and
true.
And even this one, which this is one of the more intriguing and erudite Britcoms I probably have ever seen. And it's still about the two main characters making terrible choices and doing dumb things, and then lots of terrible things befalling them. And it's so predicated on disaster. The funny parts are when terrible shit happens to the people involved. And this is something I have a hard time getting over. And I probably have spoken to this before, and you're not going to like it, but I just find it fascinating. I always knew that there was something about British sitcoms that I both loved and hated compared to American ones. And I couldn't figure out what it is. And then I saw a lecture explaining it in the middle of a porno. Okay. I was watching a porno, and the premise of the porno is a new teacher at an all-girls school, and they're all sexy girls and everything. And so the headmistress, who's the sexiest one, of course, is going to audit his class and make sure he can function okay in this environment. And what happens is he's up in class teaching and she's in the back and she does a whole bunch of naughty shit. And he manages to hold it together, and then the class leaves and then they have sex. Was not that interesting of a porno, all things considered. But what was interesting is the bit where he's attempting to teach and she's attempting to distract him. He is giving a lecture about the difference between American sitcoms and British sitcoms, and it is accurate and interesting. So I found a lot to be desired for this as a porno, but the lecture he gave within the middle, I was like, that is what the difference. Now I understand why I feel this way. So that to me was hilarious and made it worthwhile, but not as a porno. So don't bother. I saw a bunch of movies. I've been sick. Of course I've seen movies, but I saw two movies to talk about.
Okay. Let's talk
about one. I saw a What Culture list on underrated found footage movies. And there was one in there that I had flown under my radar before, but always seems to pop up and I wanted to check out, called As Above, So Below. And I remember when this came out, and it came out fairly lackluster, and I read the thing and I kind of didn't care, whatever. People were like, no, it's kind of underrated. It's interesting. And I watched it, and it is not. It is, what happens is interesting, except they refuse to ever explain to you why any of what happens happens. And therefore I don't care. Like, some weird shit happens because, and yeah, it's not any good. So you can still skip that one. Whatever. The other one I watched, strap in everyone, was at the request of Azure Talent. He's been pushing me for a while on this one because I've been asking folks. Found footage horror, it's my jam. What's there? And he said, you should watch Willow Creek. And I said, fuck that. That's some weird Australian torture porn. And he's like, no, it's not. It's about Bigfoot. And I was like, what? And then I figured out I was thinking of Wolf Creek, which is an Australian torture porn movie, which I don't want to see. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll do this. So it's been in my queue. I've been holding off because kind of don't give a shit about Bigfoot. So, but I was like, you know, I don't give a shit about a lot of things in these movies. And so I finally like, okay, I'm going to watch it. Just watched it with me. Is it going to be rough? Because he's our only real consistent listener. So I hate to lose him. But, okay, I'm going to start off by saying this does not remotely approach the best or worst found footage horror movie that I've ever seen. In any aspect, it is not the worst or the best at all. But there is an aspect that's pretty up there, and it's not a great one for found footage horror. It is boring as shit. And this is a problem. Found footage horror movies have a lot of things you can track and you can compare and contrast very easily. One of the big ones is, at what point in the movie does freaky shit start to happen? And this movie, which was only an hour and a half, maybe even a little less, started it almost exactly halfway through the movie. And the shit before was not interesting. Shortly after we start the hinky shit, we get into a very common sort of scene thing, which is people sitting, usually trying to sleep or whatever, and they're very, like, sort of isolated, and weird sounds and things are happening around them, and they're very nervous about it. And this is a staple of these kind of movies, especially if it's outdoors. You'll have one of those in a tent.
Right.
I don't know for certain how long that went on, but it felt like at least a half hour.
Wow.
During which just sounds happened. And they were like, what is that? I don't know. Maybe it's Bigfoot. I don't want it to be Bigfoot. I want it to be Bigfoot. Because that's the whole thing. It's a couple. And one of them is a big Bigfoot nerd and is very excited to go and try and see the spot where the famous footage is. You know, the only Bigfoot footage that most people know. And his significant other does not believe, not interested, is here to support him. So we spend a lot of time just hanging out with them. And as per found footage movies, they're pretty shitty people. I expect that. They're also not... I don't believe these two are a couple. I don't believe he is an actual Bigfoot enthusiast. I don't believe she's an aspiring actress, which is what she is. That's her whole character deal. I don't believe these two have hung out for very much time at all, even though they've supposedly been together for like 4 years. I don't believe they like each other. I don't believe they know each other. And so most of the movie is them being a couple slash fighting as a couple. And none of it feels real, and desperately none of it is interesting. And again, these are faults that many found footage horror movies have. If I was going to start going through movies, found footage horror movies I wished I hadn't seen, I would easily cull 30 of them from my brain before I would ever get rid of Willow Creek. That being said, I will tell you all, including found footage horror fans, if they actually are out there, if you never ever see Willow Creek, you will be just fine. And if you do see it, I don't know why you're doing that. Sorry, Azertown. It was dull. It was really boring. And that's sort of the worst sin, because I have seen some much worse made, worse acted, worse put together, worst premises of found footage horror movies, but they weren't boring, and that's important. I have seen more boring ones, don't get me wrong. This is not, like I said, not the best, not the worst in anything, but it was pretty bad for boring. So I am sorry about that, Azure Talon, but I saw it. Didn't suck too much, but it's not worse. All right, do a question.
You want me to do it?
Yeah, you start this time. I never remember. I always try and do back and forth, and I never quite remember who did the last one. But I think I started last time, so you start this time. We have a few out there. Not many. You still need to write in themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com, or else it's just going to be me making fun of recommendations from Azure Talent, and nobody wants that to be a show.
Craig,
our international audience
wants to know,
it?
Would you ever consider attending a writer's retreat where you are required to follow the isolated from the rest of the world idea and have to participate in workshops with other writers? Have you done anything working with other authors in the past? And do you think it would change your approach to the writing process? Is there a famous author you'd want to attend so you could bounce ideas off of them?
No, good night. No, it's not true. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I'm not opposed to doing any kind of writer's workshop thing. I never have done anything like that, but not because I'm opposed to it. It's just, I don't know. I've just one way or the other never really had an opportunity, which some people would find ironic considering the writer's workshop is here at the University of Iowa, just not very far away. But, you know, that's not something just anybody can get into. Someone gave me a book some time ago on writing with like writing exercises and stuff in it. And as I understand it, that's the kind of thing you might encounter at a retreat or whatever, things like that. Again, not opposed to that kind of thing. And of course, all the stuff I've written in the past, I only had friends to read it and give me feedback. So,
and we mostly lied.
So I'm pretty used to, you know, for a lot of people, one of the reasons they will.
I'll get that. Hold on.
One of the reasons they'll do workshops and things.
Hello? Hello? You want to keep ringing? You don't want to keep ringing. All right.
Pretty soon. Well, have a good day.
Still talking.
It's the answering machine.
You're the answering machine. I'm getting a text.
I guess whoever it is hung up. Somebody's
texting me. You go on. I don't care.
A lot of people will do these things because they don't feel comfortable sharing their work with other people, or that's something they're trying to overcome. Because, you know, as I understand it, and I've never had this problem, but as I understand it, a lot of people who fancy themselves writers face the trouble of they've got a whole book full of ideas or stories that they've never let anybody see, and they're petrified to let anybody see it. I wasn't even aware that was a thing until, like I said, someone gave me a book about writers and writing with some exercises and stuff in it. And it treated the reader, which in this case happened to be me, like this kind of person who was a private writer who never wanted to share their stuff with anyone. And a lot of the book was about encouraging someone who was a writer to like get over that, which didn't really apply to me. But I think, but that makes me think that if I did attend a writer's workshop or whatever, that I would be an oddball compared to the other people. Like everyone else's history with writing and wanting to be a writer would be very different than mine. And their attitude toward writing, especially fiction, would be very different than mine. And that I'm not sure I would contribute anything. I think I would get something out of it because I can get something out of just about anything. But I think I would feel like I was a waste of everybody else's time.
So basically you in any group situation.
Well, I suppose, but I mean, you know, it applies especially when it comes to writing and fiction and all that stuff. I mean, my experience is just so different, apparently. I mean, I'm just getting that from other feedback.
Yeah, but I don't know why you, I mean, the writer's workshop is to help you write better, but the task of the attendees is not to teach the others better writing methodology.
Oh, I know, but I mean,
it's to critique the writing, and that is something you can and do just fine.
I realize that. What I'm saying is, you know, oftentimes I feel like I'm in situations. I mean, this podcast is a little this way. I feel like I'm in situations where I'm getting more out of a situation than I'm contributing. And that doesn't feel good.
Oh yeah, so, no, this definitely applies here. Yeah, I'm getting nothing.
This is what I mean.
But no, and that's that's all your concerns. Like, as someone who has benefited from your editing of my work and from your creative assistance and stuff, you contribute plenty. I will agree. That's would probably be an odd one out there, but yeah, dude. Here's a big hint. If I don't think you're super helpful, I'm going to stop having you edit my shit. I'm still sending you my shit. I'm even done. Like, I'm going to send out, or did I already send it out? I don't think I did. I'm going to send out. I've been so sick. I don't know what's real. I'm going to send out a thing to my former editors asking if they want to edit again, because some of them offered to, and because I desperately need other people to tell me how bullshit my stuff is. Odd Wings is proof. Like, that book is 1,000 times better than it would have been without the editors, because especially in early drafts, I had editors telling me, like, this is terrible. Like, your protagonist is a terrible person and this is gar. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then it was true and it's all better. And it's like, wonderful. So I need that. And so I'm probably going to be doing that soon. And you and Trish, originally just you, but now Trish is on there too. I'm not even going to ask. You have no choice. I'm going to send you shit. You have to edit it. Okay, and I would not do that if I did not think you were valuable in that sense.
I appreciate that.
Now it helps. And this is the thing, having editors, there's probably a bad side of having editors that know you well, because you give me certain benefits of the doubt that another reader wouldn't. But there's a benefit of knowing you too, because I know how to interpret your commentary.
Right.
And right. So certain, if you said something about my book and somebody else said something about my book, word for word the same, I still might view it differently because I know what you mean.
Right. Right.
So that helps. So I don't know how useful you'd be to these hypothetical strangers in the woods somewhere.
Yeah, that's hard to say.
I am super into this idea. To the degree that at some point I assume it's going to happen. The problem is, before COVID, I would have done this in a heartbeat. But before COVID, I wasn't writing, at least not very much. And I wasn't, it hasn't become a thing like it is now. It was a little bit, but I hadn't really gotten serious. And so, like, I still hope to attend Clarion West sometime, because all of my favorite authors out there attended Clarion West. And there's a lot of online ones you can do and stuff, but I absolutely want that because my writing is not good, or at least not great. I have a spark of talent for storytelling, and my writing can be entertaining, but it's not great writing, and it can be so much better. And some of that is going to be writing, but you can't do that shit in a vacuum.
Right.
Because then you're just reinforcing your own stuff.
Yep.
And so, to me, the writer's workshop is like the best version of people outside me need to tell me what's fucking wrong with it so I can fix it.
Yeah.
Because these are people who theoretically, if not already are qualified to say that kind of thing, are also thinking in the same terms.
Right, right.
As far as authors that I would want to be there, I mean, any author that I think tells a really good story, I would love to be there. My two go-tos lately are Becky Chambers and N.K. Jemisin. And I mean, I would love to hear from them, of course. I would also just love to hang out with them. And Lecky, I also could throw in there. Yeah, I don't know. the Ben Aronovich stuff I've been listening to, I really like. So it's hard to say. Becky Chambers is one that I would really like to hear, because I don't understand what she does. N.K. Jameson is a author and storyteller beyond my capacity as a human being. And I get that, but I like see what she's doing. I could never do it, but I get it. Becky Chambers is doing some magic. Becky Chambers is telling compelling, interesting, entertaining stories that are thought-provoking on a social, on an issue of social justice and social issues and social difficulties and complications and problems in a way that is seamless. She is telling stories that are really making me think about serious issues involving race and gender and sex and poverty and class and all sorts of things like that in a story that's not really about any of those things. And they're just fascinating. And she makes characters that I want to live with. I mean, they're amazing. And her world building is amazing. Like, I don't know what magic she's got going, but I would love to learn what that is. She's some of the only stuff that just like, she does book Ted Lasso's for me. Like, I'm engaged and my emotions are all over the place, but ultimately I just feel happy and I cry sometimes and stuff, but I feel good. I feel good. It feels like the highest nutritional value of media for me to consume. And I don't know how she does it. So yeah, I'd be into that. And hopefully will be someday. Cause I think I need more outside voices to help me with the writing.
Yeah. I need that too. Probably. I mean, definitely not probably. Yeah. Definitely need that.
Yeah. I've spent a lot of time lately figuring out what I want as an author. And it keeps coming back to that thing of like, I don't want fame or money from it. I just want people to read my shit. And yeah. Speaking of, I have enrolled in a thing. Smash Words is gonna have a year-end holiday sale, and Odd Wings will be in there. So from September 17th to January 4th, it's gonna be half price, which is approximately $1.49. So for those of you for whom $2.99 was a bit steep, now you got a deal. So check that shit out.
Have any of the has its availability changed at all? For example, is it available anywhere where it wasn't before?
Like, no, the only place it's ever going to become available that it's not currently will be Amazon, and that's a whole kettle of fish I got to do.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So it's in their premium catalog, so it's pretty much available anywhere you would ever buy an ebook, except Amazon. And unfortunately, that's where most ebooks are bought.
But you could buy the book there at Amazon, right?
No. As far as I know, there's no book. I mean, well, I haven't done anything at Amazon. And the other one, no, it's just an ebook.
Ebook, okay.
No, actually, Trish was like thinking for a family member of ours. She was like, could we like go to Lulu and get like one hard copy? And I was like, the short answer is no. The long answer is yes, but it would be a pain in the ass and probably cost a surprising amount of money. Because I'm like, essentially, I'd have to republish it because my publishing key is through Smash. I published it. It's the Smash Words edition. And so I'd have to republish it at Lulu. They mostly likely have format distinctions that I need to adjust for. And then a print run of one volume is going to be a very expensive unit price. Because those are the kind of things that are cheaper the more you do.
That's true. Although I'll bet you could easily get a PDF and just print it at Kinko's or something.
I can get a PDF now.
Yeah. And then you could print it at Kinko's and, you know, like a.
Yeah.
Binder or something. I mean, that would be
fine. Although that's actually surprisingly expensive too. I know that's true. Because I actually printed it out from some of my previous editors. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. I've spent more on this book than I realized. Dang. Made 20 bucks though. And I've gotten all of it paid now. I've got all my royalties in a PayPal account. It's like 20 bucks.
Cool.
Tight. But yeah, no, I love these ideas. This is where it works up. Now, I had a friend, listener of the hat, actually, hooked me up with the Iowa Writer's House, which is a little writer's workshop group in Iowa City. They hooked me up because they had a friend in it, so they sort of introduced me. What that resulted in is that I ended up on their mailing list. Not anything else has happened. And since then, I have spoken to other people, and it's a collection of people who want to be writers. Some of them are writers, but they want to be writers. And so it's a real mixed bag what you got and what they're interested in and what they may or may not do. And yeah, it doesn't sound like it would be a great setup for me. I think in these circumstances, I would need an experienced facilitator who knows how to make these things go rather than just a group of strangers who read to each other and then criticize each other's work. I don't know that I feel that. So, well, I have to see. But yeah, Real Writers Workshop. I'm totally down for that. Why, Craig? Are you gonna do one? Is it gonna be like a tele thing? We can hook up. We can do it Scotland time. Sorry, where the fuck does he live now? Liverpool? Croydon? Gibraltar? I don't remember. Something. Pasadena, California. My house? Does he live at my house? Greg, are you here? I don't remember where he lives. He is Scottish. He doesn't live in Slough. But to be fair, I was going to say that applies to all of us, but no, most of us aren't Scottish. I don't think many of us live in Slough, so that one applies. But oh my God. So I tried to watch a found footage horror movie the other day. It's Scottish. And I felt so bad because the protagonist is this woman and she's got a Scottish accent. And I have a thing for women with Scottish accents. So whatever, that's really good. But then we get her boyfriend involved. And he is speaking in such a way that I have only heard in situations making fun of the unintelligibility of Scottish people. But he's just talking. Mm. And the problem is the captions were 30 seconds ahead.
Oh.
So by the time I knew, I had no idea what he just said. It was well past time where I could have found out. So I had to bail. And I am discovering this. Like I watch a lot of British TV and I'm better with the accents in general. Not necessarily identifying them, but just understanding them. And most British people seem to relatively be okay with that. There's still a slice of Scotland that no one else can understand, including all the rest of the Brits. And I don't like, there are plenty of, you know, Northern accents and West Country accents stuff that people make fun of and they have weird accents and weird dialects and weird terms, but everybody like can understand them. There is a chunk of Scotland that no one outside of Scotland understands. And that makes me feel better because I don't understand. And it's not all of Scotland by any means. Tons of Scottish people understand just fine. But there's a certain, maybe it's like an inner city thing. Because they're also, I do know if you get too street level, slangy, even if you're like from London or whatever, I have trouble with it. But I don't know. How'd we get to this? I don't remember. Something the boy said.
There's definitely people in the American South who are very hard, even for other Southerners to understand.
I've been caught on some Cajun. There is a section. So in the Peter Grant novels that I listen to by Ben Aronovich, his mother is from Sierra Leone. But has lived in London forever and ever and ever. But she has a very thick accent that he does, which is fine. I can understand her. But every once in a while, she switches to essentially a patois. And there's a time where he had a whole conversation with her like that. And I'm just listening. I don't have the book. I have very little sense of what she said. And I'm like, I don't feel like I would have this problem if I could see it, because I could see the chunks. And he did an amazing job with it. But I'm like, no. I got two or three nouns, so I know what the conversation was about. That's enough.
I worked with a guy in Kentucky who most of the time I didn't understand what he was saying.
But I was like, it's specific people, because ACT, and Trish has this now, so many accents at ACT. Ton of people from the Indian Peninsula. Ton of people from China, Southeast Asia, things like that. You get lots of accents. And as you hear them repeatedly, you understand them better.
Right.
And it meant I, in my last position, was very good with Chinese accents. But there were a lot of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi people who I had difficulty understanding. And Trish was the opposite, because those are who she worked with. But what I love is it's individual to the person. So I had a friend, Stephanie, from China, and I had a hard time understanding her in the beginning, but we worked together for years and I could understand her perfectly fine after a time. We would have I was in a meeting with somebody who I wasn't normally in a meeting with from the same region of China as my friend Stephanie, and I couldn't understand a word he was saying. And it wasn't that his English was worse, but the accent of his voice specifically was not something I was used to.
Right.
So I find that very interesting.
That is interesting.
And it is fun to hear stories from ACT of people. I mean, lots of plain old Midwestern white people who like can't understand certain people or can't remember their name. But then there are other people who are also from similar lands or whatever, and they have no problem with them because they work with them regularly. And hearing an old white dude be like, it's spelled like it sounds, with a really elaborate Indian name, is really funny, because I'm like, how would you know what? But it's what you get used to, and it's why the intolerant thing exists. People usually are intolerant of people they don't spend a lot of time around, because they're strange, because they're alien, because they're different. And it can work at the individual level. And I find that very fascinating. But I maintain there's a chunk of Scotland that nobody understands except Scotland. And Craig,
Slice of Scotland. That's what we should name this episode, Slice
it of is. Scotland. I was going to go with Rose MacGruber, but I think Slice of Scotland is better.
Rose MacGruber.
For some reason, I've been watching the old MacGruber videos lately. I don't know why. Probably because they're planning to do a movie or TV show, and I don't give a shit about those, but I'm watching the originals. Craig, get on the blog and tell me I'm wrong about this, or that I'm right. That would also be fun. But like, is this really a thing? I don't even have this with a Welsh thing. Welsh accent is bizarre. As I've said many times, when I first met people with a genuine Welsh accent, I thought there was a developmental disability issue going on. That is how strange that accent is to me, or at least was. Nowadays, I've heard it so much, I'm very used to it. But I have never heard a Welsh accent so heavy that I couldn't tell what they were saying, unless they were actually speaking Welsh, which I think is cheating.
But you can speak Welsh.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Your diction is perfect.
And I can say boyo, but I stole that from the Irish, so I don't know if it counts. Both of them do boyo. But the Scottish, yeah, it's just fucking weird. So, yeah, tell me about that, Craig, if I'm full of shit or what. The rest of you, go to the blog and tell us what you think. And also, write in. We need more questions, always. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Write in stuff. See, this is fun. We talked about writing because that's what Craig wanted to talk about. What do you want to talk about? Write to us, and then we'll probably have to talk about it. Maybe not. We are fickle beings. We don't put a lot of effort into anything, but we might have to. So that's your best chance. So do that and listen again next week. I hope everybody's having a good in-between holiday time. Nothing's really coming up right now. When's Hanukkah this year? I don't know.
I think it's come and gone.
No way! Early Hanukkah!
I think. I could be wrong about that.
I don't know. If you know when Hanukkah is, go to the blog. Tell us, or we can look it up. Whatever.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.